Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rates and Lanes with your hosts, Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Rates and Lanes podcast. I'm your host, Rico Muhammad. We'll be joined shortly by my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow, here shortly. And I also will welcome back our becoming a resident kind of guest to the show. We appreciate him taking time out of his schedule. Mr. Michael Lampel will be joining us again tonight as well. But before we jump into all of that, let's do as we normally do. We'll kick off with this week's DAT Trend Lines report. And we're showing that diesel fuel price is still continuing a slight little bit of a decline. Showing average diesel fuel price across the nation at $2.39 per gallon. Spot market matrix continued their upward trend last week, with ratios on DAT1 network climbing in response to seasonal demand as some states attempt to return to normal life and produce enters the supply chain. The increased demand brings some relief for carriers that have struggled with low rates during COVID-19 crisis. So let's take a little bit of a deeper dive, look and see how we're doing by segment types, starting out with dry van segment. We'll see how the rates were performing across the nation. As soon as my technology cooperates with me. Okay, here we go. So starting out in the northeastern portion of the United States, we have outbound spot market rates averaging $1.35 per mile on the outbound portion of the report. Moving now to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern portion of the reports, we're showing outbound spot market rates for dry vans at $1.53. Moving to the Midwest, outbound spot market rates averaging $1.68. Down in the south central portion of the United States, outbound spot market rates for dry vans at $1.50. Wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, outbound spot market rates for dry vans at $1.53. Jumping over to the National Flatbed Report for rates, spot average spot market rates coming out of the northeastern portion of the United States, we're showing average outbound spot market for flatbeds at $1.76. To the mid-Atlantic and southeastern portion of the United States, we're showing average outbound flatbed rates at $1.95. Out of the Midwest, we're showing outbound spot market rates averaging at $1.93. Moving down to the south central portion of the United States, average outbound spot market rates for flatbeds at $1.87. And coming out of the West Coast, average outbound flatbed rates at $1.72. Jumping over, moving to the temperature controlled or reefer portion of the report. Coming out of the Northeast, we're showing outbound spot market reefer rates at $1.55. Moving out of the Southeast and Mid-Atlantic states, we're showing outbound rates at $1.85. Coming out of the Midwest, showing outbound reefer rates at $1.93. Moving out of the South Central portion of the United States, outbound reefer rates at $1.88. And coming out of the West Coast, California, and the like, showing outbound spot market rates averaging at $2.08 per mile. That will wrap up this week's DAT Trend Lines report. With that said, let me go ahead and bring and welcome on board my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow. Good evening, Chuck. How are you?
We're doing well. How are you, Rico?
Doing well. Can't complain. Really looking forward to things seem to be returning back to normal across the country, slowly but surely. Hopefully, we're not looking at any type of real bad second waves or regressions. But I've been hearing positive news for the most part. But yeah, definitely looking forward to maybe things getting back or as close to as normal as we possibly can.
Yeah, we're all hoping for that. You know, it's too bad things had to go this way. And, you know, every day you hear of new challenges for some, for people. You know, I'm sure you heard about Hertz today. It looks like they'll declare bankruptcy. there was a trucking company, it was a conglomerate that owned, I think CTI was one of them, but they owned about five carriers, and they've thrown in the towel. They're declaring bankruptcy. I believe they're selling their divisions, and then they're going to bankrupt the holding company. But it's, you know, it's all over the place, which is too bad because it puts every single one of us in a very tough position because we all take chances with people that owe money to us. And I'm noticing already some of the smaller factoring companies that carriers work with. I've had a call from some of the smaller carriers that we deal with that use factoring companies saying, you know, that their factor is basically they're out of money. Now, these are the real small ones. And, you know, asking who do I know from the bigger ones? And if just like we talk about getting close to a bank, if you're going to use a factoring company, make sure you know who you're dealing with, because you want to have somebody that's got deep pockets for times like this. It is best, though, if you can, as we have talked about 100 times on this show, if you can have a line of credit and not use a factoring company. But that's a whole other thing for another show, again, that we'll have to talk about.
Absolutely. Well, with that being said, I don't want to keep our guests waiting. Let's welcome Michael back on board with us. Michael, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing well, my friends. Can you hear me?
Beautifully.
Coming in loud and clear.
Excellent.
So Michael, like I say, it looks like we're starting to somewhat turn the curve a little bit. What are some of the things that you, indications that you're seeing that may, you know, maybe give us some, we're looking for some good news here, I guess, you know, some things that may be coming down the pike that lean more towards better times or things returning back to that somewhat of a normal that you can share with us?
Well, I think, I mean, one of the things that's interesting about the transportation industry is that what Chuck was referring to earlier, I want to touch on that in a few minutes, but right now what I want to say to the guys out there and to the ladies out there is this. What we're having right now is a massive schism between the big carriers and the smaller operators. I know it's very, very tough right now for the smaller operators, but, one of the things that's happening is that the big operators who have been basically loading up on debt, loading up on a lot of costs for years, are no longer able to stay alive. And the COVID has just, this pandemic has just blown the holes out of their sides. So what you're really getting is as much as the smaller guys hurting, the big companies are under tremendous financial stress, and that could be good news for the smaller operator.
I agree.
Right. So for the small and medium-sized operators watching their bottom line, this could be a very, they'll be able to do good business, though not today, because, of course, the volumes are not what they used to be just 6 months ago, and God willing, we can get back to somewhat normal. But I think there's going to be some more pain to be felt, but for the small to medium-sized operator, who's going to be local, they're going to be able to pick up a lot of that slack because the big guys fold under. And that's what's happening right now. Big retailers are going under. Big trucking companies are going under. The ones who just mismanaged their whole operation. And
yeah,
now they're paying the price for it.
Carrying a whole bunch of extra debt that they can't service at this time. And, your average owner-operator out there doesn't go or even small fleet operator doesn't go and buy 500 trucks at $120,000 or $130,000 each because it's a smoking deal, so they don't have the exposure.
Right.
And that's why they're going
to
survive.
And I want to touch something you said, Chuck, which was interesting about the freight, the billing companies, the freight factoring companies.
Right.
Ladies and gentlemen, one of the things you have to consider is you're using a freight factoring company in order to generate cash flow. And I said this before on the show, which is why not give your customer the factoring that you're going to give to the factoring company?
Sure.
So if you're going to take a discount to the factoring company to get paid faster, take that discount and go to your client.
100%. A lot of them will take it in these times because they're looking at cutting their cost. So if they can save 1.5 to 5%, they're going to do it.
Right, but then, but why give it to a stranger who could go out of business with your money when you can go to your customer and say, I'll give you a 2% discount if you pay me within 7 days?
Yeah.
Right? It's just a cash flow thing.
Well, I think a lot of times people don't realize how expensive factoring can be. You know, I've stood on a stage
and risky.
In front of 300 truckers and told them that they're paying between, you know, a minimum of 18%, but more like 24 to 60% for their line of credit from a,
right.
from a private factoring company.
Because most people don't realize the how the interest rate is calculated with the factoring
right.
companies, and how it's calculated on 30 days, not on an APR, not an annual percentage rate, but it's on a 30-day
right.
Percentage rate, which turns that, which they think that, oh, I'm only paying 5%. Well, that 5% miraculously can turn really quickly to 60%.
Well, it does, because you have 12 turns a year. If you're servicing that customer once a month, you have 12 turns a year. And that's 12 times 5 is 60. You can't argue with numbers. And that's the danger.
That's right.
You
so,
know, a lot of brokers out there are, you know, there are a lot of carriers are complaining about brokers. But, you know, people are giving away their money at all sorts of junctures. Yeah, it costs money to use a broker. It costs money to use a factor. Where else can our carriers save money? Can they buy their fuel smarter, perhaps? You know, what else can they? Can they buy their tires smarter? And right now, you need to look at that. Yes, fuel is way down, and at the same time, you're not getting the sympathy from the customer because fuel is cheap, and you're not getting your fuel surcharge. So you're not really, in a lot of cases, saving any money. As a matter of fact,
so
sometimes when fuel is really expensive, when fuel is very expensive with fuel surcharges, you can do very well because customers are on your side. Your customer that just put 10 gallons of gas in his minivan and had to spend $50, he feels for you. You know, he'll give you the extra $100, whether it's a broker or your own direct shipper. They feel your pain. In this market, you don't get that sympathy.
So I'm going to go. Oh, yeah, there's an article here. Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yep. Over there.
Okay. I'm going to post an article over on our Facebook page. Chuck, I just sent it to you. If you see, hopefully you've gotten it. I sent it to you via text message.
Okay.
But this article is 7 hours old from Business Insider. Title,
right.
Angry Truck Drivers Are Slamming Trump for Saying Their Protest on Devastatingly Low Rates Was a Sign of Love for Him. So here are a couple of key bullet points from the article. Truck drivers are pushing back on Trump for saying that their ongoing protests in Washington, D.C. was a sign of love. Point number two, in fact, the protests are aimed at increasing transparency into the brokerage industry where truck drivers are paired with retailers and manufacturers to move loads. Point number three, Trump has promised to change the system where brokers can seemingly get away with fleecing truck drivers. Point four, but drivers told Business Insider that they doubt the president will stick to his word. And this is kind of connecting some dots really quickly. This is where a lot of times business savvy, political savviness comes together, and where a lot of times smaller people are not necessarily as savvy or up to date as we probably should be when it comes to different things in the political and the business realm, because when all of this stuff was going on, when they got the meeting with President Trump, I was saying at the onset that's a pure political play. That's political grandstanding. You got to understand that you just because if you got the photo op or whatever doesn't necessarily mean that there's anything, that there's any traction that you're going to gain from that necessarily. And I think that now a couple of people are starting to realize that. I'm going to read from the article real quickly. A group of protesting truck drivers blaring their horns interrupted a White House press conference on May 15th. President Donald Trump was forced to stop talking about potential vaccines for the coronavirus to recognize the group. But Trump said that the truck drivers weren't protesting. They were parked outside the White House as a sign of love for him. In fact, it's a protest on what truck drivers say is the lack of transparency in how rates are calculated. Since the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic, their pay has sank to unusually low rates. Some 100 to 200 truck drivers have parked in Washington, D.C. since May 1st, according to Todd Spencer, who is the president of the Owner Operators Independent Drivers Association. For weeks, these drivers have sacrificed their pay to protest, which more power to you. I understand that sometimes protesting definitely has its place and everything, but at the same time, when you got a family to feed and food to put on the table, I'm not sure if that's the best use of your time and the most productive way to get what you're looking for. As I continue with the article, protesting truck drivers don't believe that everyone in the trucking industry has experienced the same collapse. They say brokers who connect drivers to retailers and manufacturers haven't seen their pay change. Many of America's largest brokers have laid off employees since the pandemic struck. How much money they take from drivers is unclear, according to Spencer, a federal regulation that requires brokers to reveal their breakdown on rates that they charge to truck drivers is often circumvented. The Washington, D.C. protests are aimed at pushing Trump and Congress to demand further transparency from brokers. Trump has said brokers are price gouging truck drivers. Still, no action has been made on Trump's side to advance the transparency into the trucking rates. So the protest in D.C. continues. Truck drivers say they're still struggling as federal government fails to provide further stimulus money too. That's a portion of the article. There's more here to it, but I'll just get you guys' thoughts on what I've rattled off so far.
Well, can I go first?
Go for it.
There is a law. It's been on the books for a long, long time. Hank Seaton can tell you how long it's been on the books. It's not something that's normally done. But there is a law. My question is, how the hell would they enforce the law? They don't even have enough money to keep prisoners in jail. Okay, where are you going to spend your money? This is federal tax dollars. If you don't like the rate that a broker offered you, nobody's forcing you to take it. There has been, obviously, there's been some brokers out there that have taken advantage, and there's lots of brokers out there that have not taken advantage. What people don't understand from a broker's point of view is costs money to run a brokerage business. It costs money for salespeople. It costs money for operations people. It costs money for rent. These things don't come for free. And when Robert Boltman said the average is 16 or 17%, he's right. And guess what? At 16 or 17%, you're not making a whole lot of money because you have to spend and invest so much money in a brokerage firm today to stay relevant. Even the amount of technology that we have had to spend, and I don't think, you know, by U.S. standards, Trafix is not, we're not a huge player. We're number 31 or 32 in the top 100, but still, you know, there's 31 or 30 guys ahead of us, and we have spent millions and millions of dollars on technology. just to stay relevant so we can do the RFQs, so we can give customers updates, so we can do billing the way customers want, all the rest of it. And I don't think that these owner-operators are seeing any of this. And I find it very frustrating because we worked so hard to deregulate a system that was so bad way before. I guarantee any of those people that are in Washington, D.C., 99% of them did not work in a regulated environment, because if they did, they'd realize there's nothing to protest. You've got the open market. And that's where I want to give this to Michael, who is both a logistician and he's also an economist, to shed some light on open markets, on the advantages.
The trucking protest, which was held in D.C., their main issues that they were protesting was the low rates, increasing operational costs, the trucking regulations, the autonomous trucks. Now, of all those things, there's not much they could do about autonomous trucks. That's technology moving forward. Trucking regulations is set by the government, and it's set by Congress, predominantly Congress and other committees. The question is, where are they focused at? A good example is all of the taxes on fuel that have been passed in North America and around the world for the past, 5 to 10 years. As they're trying to reduce greenhouse gases, they're, of course, raising the price of gas, the price of diesel fuel and other gases and other oils, which, of course, is eating right into the bottom line of truckers, right? So you got this perfect storm for trucking companies right now. The low rates are a factor that the technology is now, of course, shifting information back and forth very, very fast. And as Chuck said, he spent a lot of money on keeping themselves relevant, but it's now become a spot market everywhere. So the only thing that the trucking guys are left with are just the increasing operational costs. That's the only thing that's left within their control, right? So it's a question really of how to reduce cost. Now, one of the biggest factors that I hate to tell you guys is this, and in certain ways, I'm not a big fan, but I'm going to tell you right now, Mr. Trump was not entirely wrong, and that is, I'll just give you a very quick number. In 2000, 72% of the American economy was services. By 2017, it was 77% was services. In other words, as the jobs left the United States, because the industry and industry in 2000 was 22.5% of the American economy, by 2017 it was down to 18.21%. So as they shifted all these jobs overseas, well, that was the trucking volume. That's the volume leaving the United States and Canada, right? It's going overseas.
Because you have the raw materials leaving and the finished products. So, yeah, I get
all of it's leaving.
Everything coming over
coming
on containers.
Full containers.
Yeah.
That's all that's coming back is full containers, right? So you're now seeing basically a race to the bottom. And as the volume of shipments decreased, of course, they began to turn from efficient trucking companies to let's play with money and interest rates and let's play factoring, let's play a whole host of things, which killed the little guy. Because the little guy did not have that kind of power and sophistication to keep up to these guys. And these guys, of course, they went to Congress and said to Congress and the congressional districts and everything, let's grease you guys up during elections, and you'll pass regulations to keep smaller players out of our market so we can dominate our market. And that's exactly what happened. Now what's happened, of course, is that the pandemic, all of these companies in the past 2 years, so as the volumes kept getting lower, those companies that you're seeing, Chuck and Rico, that were loaded up on debt, they're not able to survive anymore. They can't play this game anymore.
Right.
So they're now a victim of their own success. As the volumes got lower, their debts got higher. They played an awful lot of games with taxes and laying off people. They did anything they could to stay afloat, but the volumes weren't coming back. Now, President Trump, and I think this pandemic in a certain way is going to do that, has focused back the need to move production back into the United States. Now, but that's not going to happen tomorrow.
No, it takes. Right? I mean, it takes a long time.
Takes a long time for manufacturers of auto parts. I think what this pandemic did is it highlighted to the American industry, whether it be an automotive or apparel or whatever, that they can no longer risk having a single source country, like shipping it all to China and then trying to bring it back in. So there will be a lot coming back, but it's not going to be tomorrow. So as we talked before on the show, for all you truckers listening, pay attention to your bottom line. Be very, very careful with the debts that you're taking on, right? Be more creative in terms of how you get your cash flow rolling faster. Because the faster you get your cash flow, the less you are a victim of shady operators and shady billing companies and everything else. And what we have is a lot of guys working for cash flow, not for profit.
Exactly. And you can't work for cash flow.
Not for very
long. As far as the thing that everybody's pushing for, I want to share this and I'm going to read this. This is directly from this is actually I want to make sure that I'm saying it right. CFR 371. This is already on the books. It's under 371.3. Records to be kept by brokers. And if you go to that section, if you Google that, you pull up that section under the law, section, let me find it here. Section C. Each party to a brokerage transaction has the right to review the record of the transaction required to be kept by these rules, which basically gives you the right, if you are a part of a brokerage transaction, to see what the broker transaction, how much was actually made. Now, whether or not you're going to get now it's on the books, but whether or not it's enforced or whether or not you're going to get someone to participate to actually how you're going to force them to show you, that's maybe the genie still in the bottle right there. It's already on the books.
It's on the books. Yep. So what year was that written, did it say?
This is an updated edition from 10-1. I'm not sure the format. They have the dates of this in, but this is the updated version. Right.
Yeah, I mean,
it's 10.104, I don't think this is from 04.
Yeah, it's unenforceable. It's unenforceable. The amount of data flowing in logistics is so massive it's massive. The amount of, you know, you talk about bills ladings, you talk about invoices and rates, it's massive. And the amount of players also, I mean, we're talking about thousands and thousands of carriers. So it's
brokers.
You know, I love these guys inventing these ideas, but forget it. You guys might as well say we're gonna stop every wind blowing and try and forget it. It's too large to enforce. But it created a rule now that some people implemented, and it took up time and money and energy and everything else to implement the totally useless rule. And that was another cost that was pushed on to the carriers that ultimately didn't help anybody.
Yeah. You know, it's an open, free market. You don't have to, you can go where you want, you can haul what you want, you know, do something rather than complain. I challenge those guys in Washington to do something to better their situation. If they think selling freight is so easy, they should go see some customers and try to get their own customers. Then they won't need a broker. Or
well, something I want
you know,
to, I want to. I wanted to bring out to light as well while we got Michael on is to tell to kind of explain the inner workings on how supply and demand actually works. I mean, we had the entire world, not only the country, but the entire world for a period of time basically was shut down. And you don't have that puts a real constraints on any type of commerce, international, national, local, that puts real constraints on that. And when that happens, when that takes place, if we're quote unquote in the free market and how supply and demand works, things cannot necessarily move at the same rate. Now, that by no means am I suggesting that anyone should operate their business at a loss. I understand that, you know, that's going to catch up with you real quick if you continue to always operate your business at a loss. But there are times when you have to. It's just like, you know, the strategy when you're going into certain markets in trucking. You already know if you're going to go into Florida, you got to take your backhaul with you. In certain places, unless you're doing produce time or whatever, you already know that if you go into certain areas where you're going to come out at a deficit, but you should hopefully have made enough money on the front end to cover that. Now, that possibility may have been lost with the pandemic taking place. But just kind of, you know, with all of the different industries and the different things that shut down in the other industries that help supply those industries and how they, you know, didn't even have an opportunity, you know, the auto, the manufacturer, so on and so forth. Michael, maybe you can give us maybe a crash course real quickly on, you know, maybe breaking some of that down so that people understand that the rates weren't just somebody just threw something up against the wall to see if it was sticking. It was actually the market reacting to what was going on.
Well, the biggest change in the transportation industry is actually in rules of economics, which is there's always been two rules of economics, and until the birth of the internet, there was one particular part of the rule of economics is that for thousands of years, information flowed slowly. So therefore, somebody raised the prices, let's say in England on a bottle of scotch, it's going to take a while before that price translated in the United States. In today's world, the second law of economics of supply and demand was the real competition and perfect competition. And perfect competition had one added rule that was never implemented till the last 15, 20 years, and that is that information flows freely. Internet made information flow freely. So now what you're getting is anyone who has access to information can very quickly source out a trucker who's going to be cheaper, very instantly. So as this information speeds up, and as Chuck said earlier, he invested millions of dollars, is they're constantly trying to keep up to date with the information because their clients could easily go online and say, hey, Chuck, you wanted $1.05 for this mile. I found three guys willing to do it for $1.02. Will you match it? And I'm going to share with you I'm going to share with you a very quick story, Rico. You're going to love it. I go into Best Buy, right? And I want to buy a laptop. This actually happens today. While I'm standing at Best Buy looking at a laptop for $1,000, I actually go on one of their other laptops that's connected to the internet. I look up another store that's selling it for $900. I walk up to the counter and tell them, hey, here's another store selling it for $900. And guess what they do?
Match the price.
They match it. Okay, so information. Now, going back to that other conversation about having brokers reveal their profit margins versus their not and things of that nature, the one area that the trucking, the using of cheaper truck lines, cheaper trucker all the time, you know, the only thing they can control, as I said, is their operational cost. That's all they can control. Am I right, guys?
Yep, absolutely. Of course.
Okay, and the heaviest part of the operational cost is maintenance.
And fuel.
So.
Yeah.
And fuel. So what you now get is you get guys cutting very, very close to not maintaining the trucks. So now they're not running safely. That's the first part. The second part, if Congress wants to help out the truckers, what they should do is alleviate the gas tax on truckers. Keep it there for the drivers of cars and for the airlines who are very, very healthy, and alleviate the gas tax. And an interesting part, by the way, is because you have asset-backed trucking companies, you have freight brokers would not be able to take advantage of fuel surcharges. They don't. Freight brokers don't buy fuel. It's the guy on the ground who's buying the fuel. It's the independent guy who's paying for the fuel. So if you give them a tax break on their fuel and say, okay, you're a trucking company, a legitimate trucking company, you don't have to pay the following taxes on fuel. Now suddenly they got, and you also require them to provide not just their driver's logs, but their maintenance logs. So Now all of a sudden you're starting to weed out the guys who can't and the guys who do. And now you're getting much better quality freight.
Quality carriers. Well, you know what's funny? When you have times like this, the first thing that some companies and individuals will do, they'll start cutting on maintenance, which is deadly because, first of all, if you get caught somewhere, it's a lot more expensive to replace a tire on the road than it is at your home base. Sometimes it can be three and four times as much. Same as any repairs. And if, God forbid, you get pulled over to scale and they do an inspection on you and, you know, you've got faulty brakes or something mechanical that is safety related is found, it can end up costing you a hell of a lot of money, especially if you're in a place like Ontario where we have truck jail. And they actually will take the truck and the trailer. They will allow you to unload it if the brakes are out of whack. And this is just with brakes that are out of adjustment, okay? And they will put the truck in a locked compound for, you know, up to a week or 2 weeks, depending on who it is and what your safety rating is like. And then you have to have a towing company pull it out. It's very, very expensive. It's not worth cutting corners when it comes to maintenance. And people are going to find this out. But, of course, if there's no money coming in because you're working for cash flow and not profit, that's what happens. And it makes it more dangerous and, of course, more accidents.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's no way you could put the genie back in the bottle and say to the entire manufacturing industry, you can no longer use information to source better pricing on trucking. There's just no way to do that. So
exactly. It's
now a race for everybody to constantly be ahead. So if you're a trucking operator with, like, just by yourself or two trucks or three trucks, stay local because you're not going to beat the information highway. Like, you could take a load from Chicago down to California thinking you got a return load. By the time you get there, the load is gone. Right? So,
that's
part of the problem.
Well, yeah,
there's no way to unteach that. You can't put the genie of information back in the bottle.
Right. And that's why, you know, if the people that do, it's funny, throughout this whole pandemic, the carriers I know that run steady routes, they may be a little bit slower, but they're not dead. The only guys that are unfortunately having a horrendous, horrendous time are the people I know that are connected with the automotive hauling sector. They're having just a horrible time. But the other people I know that have specific lanes that they operate, they're still, you know, trucking seems to be, I'm not going to say it's resilient, but it's a hell of a lot more resilient than the airlines or the car rental business or the event business or a myriad of other businesses. So I think we need to be thankful that we're in the business we're in, although some sectors of it are hurting.
Rico?
I'm sorry?
Rico? Sorry, so I got a question for you, Rico. In terms of where you're sitting at today, when these trucking companies go out of business, what happens to all their drivers?
They are more than likely they're on to the next. I don't know of many people that there always seems to be. It's an interesting conversation, Michael, because we talked about we had another gentleman on. When we talked about this, there's always seemed to be, since I've been in trucking, there's always been this big gray cloud hovering over the industry of a driver shortage. And the thing that I've always scratched my head over is if there's so much of a driver shortage, then and if we operate on supply and demand, then it will reflect in the rates. And it never seems to be as dire as it is always made out to be that we're having this tremendous driver shortage because I can't see it reflecting in the rate. It seems like if we were that much short on drivers and trucks that the rates would continue to always be climbing and not facing these wild swings that we're going through right now. Yeah, but those drivers, well, those drivers often move on to the next thing going.
Yeah, and I think, and this is where, you know, the government is not going to be able to legislate back rules to prevent freight brokering, because it's not, it's an information superhighway. And remember, as you said, Rico, as the amount of there was a driver shortage, but while you're saying, while the industry was saying there's a driver shortage, the amount of production was continuing to fall. Always a balancing act between capacity of drivers, how many drivers available, and the actual manufacturing underlay. So you guys were suffering through the perfect storm. The question now, after all of what's just happened, is will there be a shift by companies to move their manufacturing back to the United States? That's what you guys have to watch out for. So
I think there will be.
Well, that's the point. If you start seeing that the service end, that the production end of the economy begins to tick up, meaning more apparel companies and furniture makers and automakers. And by the way, the autos are just assembled here. The parts are not made here.
Right.
Right.
Not all of them. No, they're made all over the world.
Exactly. So if these things start to, if they come back, and there is a big push right now in Congress, like, okay, we need to relook at what we called essential, because a lot of the stuff that they shipped out, you know, a really good example was technology. Well, I don't understand the love affair people have with Apple, saying Apple is America. Apple is not America. Apple is Foxconn.
It's China.
It's right. China. So yeah. Why are you people telling me Apple is America? Apple's not America. Apple is a massive industrial complex called Foxconn in China. Nothing is made in the United States. If they start to move this back, then, Rico, what you're going to see is freight volumes will start to pick up, and then the driver shortages will start to have an impact in terms of pricing. But right now, the freight index, the Cass Freight Index, is not looking pretty at all.
Yeah, we have to have that balance. See, that's the problem right now. There are too many trucks chasing too little freight. And the only way we're going to increase that volume of freight to match the, and we're going to have more, there will be more trucks and truck drivers available, because as some jobs are actually going to disappear. They're done. There's certain industries that probably won't come back, because people are going to be more concerned about shaking hands and hugging and personal interaction at events and trade shows. You know, I spent a good portion of my business career going to trade shows, and I've always enjoyed them. And I built the foundation of a good business by attending trade shows and meeting people. But you know, I don't think people are going to be doing that, because they're expensive and the risk. People don't want to be shaking hands and hugging people at trade shows and catching this virus or the next virus. We're probably going to have a vaccine to this one in the not too distant future, but then there's going to be the next one, and people are worried about that. So all those people from those industries that will no longer be employed in those industries that are maybe not easily trainable for another career may very well end up driving truck, because they're making truck driving easier in a way, because now we have automatic trucks. So you don't, you know, years ago it was not an easy, it's still not an easy job, but you can train somebody how to do it easier today than you could years ago, only because the trucks are a lot more driver friendly.
Yeah, so Rico, my advice to...
I just want to remind our listeners that are listening in, if you want to get involved in the discussion, we always welcome your interaction. Press number one and we'll get right to you. I'm sorry, Michael, go ahead.
Rico, my suggestion is the one way to get trucking volumes up is to tackle Congress, your local congressman, and say, what are you doing about bringing manufacturing and things back to the United States? That's really it. If you can get them to stop, you know, to basically reverse what they've been doing for 30 years, which is shipping everything offshore, and start to bring industry back into the United States, which is what President Trump is trying to do, you know, in his own way, you know, then what you're going to have is more volume to ship. But right now, Amazon is the king because all it ships around are 20-pound boxes of Chinese-made
right.
goods.
Yeah.
That's it. That's what they're shipping. So, you know, how many furniture plants are left in North Carolina?
I don't think there's hardly any. I think if they're
very
just distributors.
Yeah, you remember those days?
Don't
Rico?
Those people just import it?
Yeah, absolutely. That was the big industry in North Carolina was the furniture industry, and it's very very little manufacturers that are left there.
Exactly.
And I go there. Yeah.
That's exactly the point. Without the heavy goods that used to be manufactured in the United States, where it said "Made in America," they didn't just ship the jobs that was used to make, you know, apparel and everything. They also shipped out the trucking jobs. And what you get is people trying to run after whatever is left, and they're up against other competitors, and they're up against information superhighway that will undercut them in 3 seconds flat. So if you see that number reverse, and that's what I would recommend to the trucking industry, is to start lobbying all their congressmen saying, what are you doing to bring back the manufacturing jobs?
It's a great point. And you know, the only problem with this concept that people need to get through their heads and they're have to live with it is it costs a heck of a lot more to produce that sofa or that recliner chair in North Carolina, or that table, than it does in China.
Not as much as you think.
And it's going to
Chuck,
cost
not
more
as
money.
Much as you think. No, Chuck. The Chinese have had huge pay increases over the last decade. But what has happened is that the guys in Congress and the ladies in Congress have been playing footloose and fancy free with the tax laws, which just made it a hell of a lot more beneficial for companies like Google and other companies to just ship their tax havens overseas, keep the manufacturing overseas, and then not bring anything back.
And that really starts
so,
out American.
Yeah, I mean, Rico, am I saying the truth or what? I mean, they're basically playing footloose and frantically with the tax laws and going like, hey, why bring the jobs back? Like, I'm going to give you a really great example, Rico. Carnival Cruise Lines. So here's the interesting point. Under the rule of the relief, the coronavirus relief aid that the Congress passed to help companies, the cruising companies were not supposed to get the money. Guess where the cruise liners are all domiciled? They're domiciled offshore because the labor laws were too repressive in the United States. So all of the people they're bringing in to do the jobs are from the Philippines and Thailand and other places. So therefore, their headquarters are in Panama or in Liberia and other places. And yet, sure enough, you know, some of them got the COVID relief packages, like Carnival Cruise Lines, even though they're heavily under in debt. But that's what they're doing. They've been playing games with the tax codes. But if
we got a caller,
we
got a question.
Yeah,
we got a caller. We're going to mix into the conversation. Caller from 912 area code. What's your name? And how can we help?
Hey, I appreciate you taking my call. My name is Steve, and I'm going to ask a quick question to your guest on today, which we know we don't have a crystal ball on what the future may hold and how things may turn out. But I wanted to ask, in your opinion and your projection, what direction you think as far as the economy going, as far as the trade coming back over into the United States, our current president is trying to do. How do you think that's going to play out if the presidential goes over to a Democrat? And you know, this is just my question to you, and what you think about that.
I got up here.
Michael, can you hear me?
Yeah. Do you want me to handle that? Thanks for the question. I think it's up to the American public to now put pressure on Congress to say, you got to start moving the jobs back. You got to start throwing up tax penalties for companies who are going to ship their jobs overseas and start bringing jobs back. But also you have to change the tax code that makes it more beneficial for companies to produce in the United States versus shipping the jobs out. And there's and by the way, I don't trust either party with it. I don't trust the Republicans with it, and I don't trust the Democrats with it. I think it's going to be up to the American people to put pressure on the Congress to say, what are you going to do about the tax breaks you're giving companies to ship the jobs out? Because it's always down to the taxes with these companies. How else do you explain a company like Apple that pays next to no taxes, Google pays next to no taxes, and yet you got a guy like Bezos who's worth the company's over $1 trillion and pays nothing in taxes at all? So they got to start telling companies who are producing goods, we'll give you a massive tax break, bring the jobs back, as opposed to what they've been doing for the past 30 years, which is giving them massive tax breaks to ship the jobs out. Am I explaining that okay?
Which is stupid.
Yeah, you know, and I know that's a tall task to ask the American people to do, because everybody got to be on one accord to be able to get that done. And I know the time is getting drawn near, but I do appreciate you guys taking my call on that question.
Yeah, but can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
I want to ask you a question. I think that the only drawback to the American people by demanding that of their, and I'm a Canadian, but it's ditto for Canada as well. We're really very similar countries. The only drawback to the North American people by not reshoring our industries back here is we're going to pay somewhat more money. Now, Michael is arguing how much we're going to pay. And I don't know. I don't know whether that couch that we buy for $700 is going to be $900 or $1,000. But I think that the amount of people we're going to have out of work in North America as a result of the changes that are coming about, I think it's well worth it if everybody's working. I think we'll all live.
Exactly
that.
Right.
I don't want to see people on the streets.
Well, I feel that. You know, with the American people, we always are able to rise above adversity. But one of our biggest hindrance and our biggest problem here in America is that we're divided. With this administration that's going in, I've never seen any administration go through the turmoil that this administration done went through as far as being divided. And we can pick blames on both sides of the aisle, but at the end of the day, I feel that we all need to come together and work together in order to get something accomplished. And I think that's our biggest enemy right there, is not being able to come together and work together in situations
like that. You're 100% right. Was it not your late president Abraham Lincoln that said, "United we stand, divided we fall"?
Exactly. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Well, I think that we all need to remember that. And this divisive, and I agree, as your neighbor standing, standing on this side of the border, Michael and I, we talk about this all the time. We shake our heads with what's going on in your country. We can't believe it. And, you know, in some circumstances, it's gone back 40, 50 years. The progress that was made is lost. And you've got, if you're not going forward, you're going backwards. You can't go backwards. It's not right. And, you know, we all love America, and we love America as the policeman of the world. And, you know, I would damn well rather have America as the policeman of the world than anybody else. But you can't do that being so divided. So I certainly hope that changes from the next administration.
We got to live through the election first.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a fun day.
I do appreciate you guys taking my call.
You know, I don't know what COVID's going on, but everybody's going to be in a bar slugging them back that night.
I'm looking at the time. The hour is blown by. Michael, would you like to share with anyone the websites or anything? How can people get in contact with you or find you if they want to?
It's michael.lampel@gmail.com. I'm happy to share any thoughts or questions you have about, look, if you got questions about the economy or what's going to happen, you know, whatever it is, shoot me up a note. Marketing is also one of the things I do. I specialize in a lot, so I help a lot of small businesses do marketing and help them, you know, get their brand aware. And I'll just say, look, as a Canadian, I sit here and I listen to a lot of Canadians sometimes really bash the Americans. I go, great, would you rather live next to Russia or next to the United States?
Well, we kind of do
it's funny you talked about the marketing aspect, and that's something that you know, I didn't get a chance to really get into, because we like to try to definitely point and target people towards more results oriented things that they can do to actually make a difference. And marketing is absolutely, I believe marketing is one of those things that you know, during this time that we've had down, we've got to be trying to figure out a better way to improve what it is that we have to offer, and that way we can differentiate ourselves from brokers if you want to go direct, or even make yourself more appealing to more brokers that you want to do business with. I think we got to figure out ways to get to where we want to go, instead of figuring out how we can take away from somebody else that has something going on. You know, develop yourself, brighten what it is that you do, and develop that and go with that versus trying to figure out a way to take away what somebody else has going on. Because as a true businessman and an entrepreneur, I think that that's really the spirit of entrepreneurship, not necessarily trying to have someone else come in and play referee, so to speak, and the operation. You got to do what you got to do to better your operation, and marketing, sales classes, all those types of things are something that we highly recommend that you try to do to help cultivate and develop your business model to make it a little bit better. Mm-hmm. With that being said, Chuck, let the people know how they can get
hold of you. Yeah, you can phone me at 800-388-4352, extension 203, or you can just send me an email, Chuck at traffix.com, or if you want to send me a private message on Instagram, Chuck Snow CEO. If I can help any of you, and I've had a number of calls in the last month, and I'm glad to help any of you sort through stuff. If you've got an issue, if you want to get set up with us, if there's something particular you need, give me a call. I'll walk you through, get you set up, and get you on a program. Whatever I can do to help any of you, I always want to give back. Thank you.
And as far as Rates and Lanes is concerned, go follow us on Facebook, like us on Facebook, subscribe to post notifications on Facebook. We're also on Instagram if you want to be sociable with us there. Rates and Lanes on Instagram. You can find us over there. Go like us over there. Also subscribe to post notifications over there, so that way we can let you know when the next shows are coming out, who our guests are, and any other special things that we may have coming down the pike. We'll have a way to be able to get that over to you. We are making a pretty good, significant push on Facebook. We're almost at getting close to 2,000 people over there. We want to try to increase that and get it over to and increase over on Instagram to pick that up as well. So those are the places that you can find us. Tell a friend to tell a friend about us, and let us know. Give us some feedback. What are some different topics and different things that you would like for us to highlight and bring to you here on a future show? We definitely welcome your feedback and let us know how we can better serve you guys. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, it's almost that time. Stay safe. Be healthy. You know, God bless you. Good night. Keep it in between the mustard and the mayonnaise. And God willing, we'll talk to you same time, same place next week.
Take care, everybody.
Catch you on the flip-flop.
Bye-bye.